Hello, my dear friends, I'm Jon from Story Club. Today I'll talk to you about the status quo in artificial intelligence. You might think it's not about you, it's something about the future, but it is. It is about you. This technology will affect each and everyone, and it's better be safe than sorry, as we say. So it's important to stay prepared and informed. No valid question if why should you listen to me? In the description you'll find a couple of links to research papers. So I kind of know what I'm talking about because since I'm myself a software developer, but I'm very interested in the field of artificial intelligence, and I did some research a couple of years ago. Now, what I don't know, I'm following up on my research and see how the industry tackles or how the community is trying to solve the questions that I addressed a couple of years ago. Now, the status quo. Have you tried ChatGPT? Last year, I'm sure you did. So my question is, what did you experience when you did that? What was the feeling you had inside you? Was it amazement? Was it, what's the first impression? Curiosity, maybe fear, but it might replace you at some point. What was it? Well, think about it. But before we go to the ChatGPT, so 6 years ago in London at the IEEE conference, I went there to see where the industry is and to ask a couple of questions in a research paper. So I addressed these four questions in general. How to teach a machine human values and what are those in general? Because we would want a machine to value the same things that we do. How to govern a superintelligence, how to make sure it does not govern us or exterminate us. How do you teach a machine common sense and what's that in general? How do you teach a machine what's irony and all these abstract things? And what kind of hardware would such an intelligence would need to run on? Because this is what we have, it's biology-driven hardware. As I asked those questions, but I didn't have definite answers. I said it's just directions for research. So right now, what I'm doing every year is going to conferences and check what's the status, check if someone made progress in the area of one question. So I went to NeuroIPS, Neural Information Processing Systems, this year in New Orleans, U.S. It's the most prestigious, one of the most sought-after conferences. And I went there to check this, what's the status quo. How far are we from reaching human level intelligence? We are far. Unless we come up with a radically new hardware. It's not digital, it's not zeros and ones. You can scale as much as possible. You can get ChatGPT 4, 5 and 6. But it would consume enormous resources, but an hour brain will run on a couple kilowatts per day. So that's where things stand. We cannot simply, it's not economically feasible to build such an artificial intelligence system that will suck the energy of continents. But how about ChatGPT and the human-like answers it provides? Well, we are far from reaching human level of intelligence, but we are, I think we cracked the code to begin with. Let's say we're having a 9 mils course, and we're right now with ChatGPT, we are the aperitif. We have 8-9 mils ahead of us. So what does the aperitif look like? Systems like ChatGPT are good at predicting the next item in a sequence. If you went to ask the question and then it got your 2,000 words answer, think it is it's a table of predictions. And with predictions, by predictions I mean it looks at the English vocabulary and sees the probability that the next sequence is the, it's 0.9. So it outputs the. Next, after this one, the probability that the next word in the sequence is common is 0.8. So it outputs common. So it's the 0.9 the. 0.8 common, so the common denominator, for example, it doesn't things like pure math, pure probabilities. Now the output's amazing results, right? Long story short, eventually we'll narrow down to the entrepreneurs that will put this technology into the human hands. How do entrepreneurs make sure people don't fear this technology, right? How do we make sure people don't throw stones at the boss, at the Google boss. Yeah, it might be, people might be fury unless they share, they have a stake in it, unless they share ownership, unless they have a piece of cake of it. Like, think that instead of you, there would be a robot that does 70% of your job, but a robot will still wire you the salary and the money and all the benefits, so you don't need to work 5 days a week, you work 2 days a week, and the rest enjoy the rest of the time for you, your family. And I don't think that is a bad scenario that people would discard and people would fear. I would love to have such a system in place. But where does the things are now? Well, not really. People don't, like the big companies don't want to share. Don't want to share the tech, the code behind it. Don't want to make it open source. For example, ChatGPT and the OpenAI AI company behind it. Initially, it started as a non-profit, but in 2018, it got into for-profit, and right now it sells the software to us, to the customers. Recently, the OpenAI fired, and after that hired back the CEO. Really not important why that happened. What is important is that humans and their vices, because we're talking about a vice here, they will guide how this artificial intelligence technology will shape the entire humanity. So it's humans and their vices will decide whether we can benefit greatly from this technology, either we can become a useless appendix that eventually will be removed. And this is where we really stand. This is the status quo. I think we're at crossroads where we can decide for ourselves. It's either we are the tool-making species, we can employ this artificial intelligence as a tool for us to use to explore other planets, for example, solve climate crisis, solve distribution of food, always resource problem, energy problem, because all the wars and all the conflicts between humans right now, it's a resource problems, because some groups have more resources than ours, and ours, they don't like it, of course, and they fight for those resources. But the moment you have abundance in energy, you don't have any wars anymore. That's what people should focus, instead of like siding with one side or another. We should just look at the core problem. What's the core problem? The core problem is we don't have enough resources to distribute them equally. Not equally, but fair. Because equal is never fair. Now that's the status quo, we're at the crossroads. I'll let Hollywood describe the doom scenario. Silicon Valley infused devices into very dangerous technology. And I'll focus on the other scenario. A scenario where this technology is employed like a tool, because humans are a tool-making species. We build, so we start with fire, and after that we build the axe. Unfortunately, we invented the gunpowder, the steam revolution. We build tools. That's what we did in our entire history. We just built tools that will help us do certain things better. And that's why we are almost 10 billion people on the planet. No other species achieved this, because they are more powerful, they are more fast than us, but they're not more intelligent, because they don't know how to build tools. Tools is the important thing here. It's, we can build tools and nobody else can. And yeah, the status quo is crossroads. Keyword is tools. Now, APES conference, during a Q&A question, and a machine learning researcher said, like, well, how we can compete with big companies? But the way you release a very smart model right now, you train it on enormous amount of data and enormous amount of hardware. As a researcher that sits in a lab for working for a university simply has not have access to this kind of resources. He cannot afford to train this a model, a great idea, a model, but he does not have a powerful computing back to prove his points or to do research. So how can we compete with big companies? We don't. We don't compete with big companies because it's like a race to the bottom. The one thing that big companies lack, and the one thing that big companies cannot do, well, what they lack is imagination. That's one thing that we still have and they don't. So, and these companies, they build models, they release them, but they don't share the source code like OpenAI. They don't. Some of them share something like weights. Google, Facebook share their weights of their neural networks. But it's like sharing the, as someone said, put it on the conference, as like sharing the bytecode of a code and not share the like the language, but turn that into bytecode. So what can we do? What can a simple mortal like you and me do? Well, the one thing we can do is to imagine. What can we do? Well, to answer that question, I will take you to a presentation made by Alan Kay. The guy is a member of a team that invented our future. It wasn't, it was the famous Xerox PARC in Palo Alto, where he was a researcher. It was a small team, but they invented most of the technology we have right now. It was not Apple, it was not Steve Jobs, it was not Microsoft. They simply came and visited the park, saw things, and went outside and convinced a bunch of investors to give them money so they can implement those things, but they didn't invent them. They just copied them. And they were pretty good at this. They were charismatic, access to resources, and could convince people that was their merit, but they did not invent. So what the people that invent, they are not as recognized as the Apple or Microsoft. If you want to replicate and want to build something radical new, we need to look at how these people did it. So how did these people did it? They had a small team of, the funding was 12-15 million per year for a period of 5 years. So it's like 60 million and the output is insane. One of these people, Alan Kay, he gave a talk on YouTube. You can check it out, How to Invent the Future by Alan Kay. It was a talk at Stanford University he was introduced by today's CEO, Sam Altman, that was hired and fired from OpenAI. And that's what he told the audience, how to make a cosmic intuition jump 30 years into the future. Did it sink? Cosmic intuition jump 30 years into the future. So if you have free time and you lay down on a bed and you don't know what to do, have free time to think about things, like imagine how the world would look like in 30 years. So I'm talking 2050. So I did that like a couple of years ago, right after I came after London from a conference, and I tried to imagine how this world would look like in 30 years from now. And I put together a novel, a sci-fi novel where people interact with this new technology. And in the next few months, I will tell you the story. I will tell you chapter by chapter how these people use and interact with this brand new technology. And that's what I'm going to do next. And hopefully it's something you would be interested in following. And maybe it will seed some of your own ideas. Because the more the better the merrier, the more ideas the merrier. Some of them will not happen. I'm pretty 90% sure that everything I described in the all the technologies I described in the reality of 2050 won't happen. But if at least 1% happen, or if at least these stories that I'll tell will incentivize someone to build a radically new technology, that's a win for everyone. That's how we can share an abundant future. That being said, thank you for your time, and see you in the next episodes. I will start the playground, because this is how the novel is called. That's the name, The Playground. It will start from in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from now, I will do The Playground. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.